Also hungry. Hey, we are live here on Matrix Breakers. I have a good friend named Deji with me who I've known for probably over 10 years, and we haven't even really caught up in some of those many years. And so I'm just going to take him through a journey of recollecting some maybe old memories and really getting connected with what he's doing now with this empathy equation and all the other wonderful things that he's done speaking and just making a profound impact on many, many people. How would you kind of introduce yourself or like what you're up to right now, Deji?
Yeah, I'd say I'm probably a philosopher at heart, right? And when I moved to the States back in 2003, can't believe it's been that long already, I didn't have a blueprint for how to conduct myself. You know, I was 17 years old, trying to figure out life, but at that point in my life, trying to figure out how to move and what life for me could look like in a country where I didn't speak the language and I didn't quite understand the culture. So my philosophies over the call it last 20 years have been, in some form or fashion, me kind of making a journal of what that journey has been like for me. And what turned out at the end of it was a blueprint, because I had to write my own path, you know. And now I think I have an obligation, not in a cheesy way, to give that back to somebody else, because I know there's people out there who are trying to figure out how to, you know, just figure out life in general. We're all born into this life. We're not given a blueprint on how to figure out life. So I think there's some value in really connecting with people who have, you know, we've got the battle scars to show it, you know, so it's like that, you know, maybe help you not get as many scars as I do, especially from the relationship kind of soft skills perspective. So that's me in a nutshell, man.
Yeah. So where are you from originally? If you tell the audience, I know I remember your story a little bit, but just kind of in your origins.
Yeah, I was born in Lagos, Nigeria. And from an early age, I remember like just looking around in my family and just thinking to myself, I this can't be it for me, right? Like I don't want to do this. I don't want this life. It didn't feel like a good fit. So at 10 years old, I told my mom I wanted to go to this boarding school. It was called the Mayflower, and it was about 6 hours away from home. And you know, I tell the story now, and my wife and I asked the question is, how did I know at that age that I just wanted to be so far away from home that I requested to just be sent away? But fortunately for me, my mom said, sure, if that's what you want to do. And I got the opportunity to go to the Mayflower School, and I was there for 6 years. Now, the school was owned by a guy called Tai Solari, which he was a massive educator in Nigeria, kind of one of the early free thinkers, you know, of the culture back in a time where thinking for yourself was not cool. And he wanted to build a school that was founded on free thought and principles of self-reliance. So those were very much the early foundation years for me. And as a goodbye gift, my dad gave me a book. It was The Odyssey by Homer. And imagine being 10 years old, 6 hours away from home in the middle of the jungle with nothing but you and your thoughts. And all you have to read is this book by, you know, an awesome philosopher. So I think that's where my early influences in philosophy began, was just me in the jungle with my own thoughts in this book, and read it, and I've been hooked on philosophy ever since.
Wow. Okay. That's kind of, that connects a lot of dots. Kind of in your early life, I'm thinking, because I'm thinking about now meeting you and everything. You know, I met you in the fitness arena, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know why, I remembered there was a kid there, young white dude, who was like working there. He was reading
about
Arnold.
White.
I know. But at least Houston's somewhat diverse. But this is back when I lived in Houston, Texas. And I remember this guy was talking about it. He goes, man, I'm reading this book by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he asks you directly, like, what do you think about this workout or something, something? And you just kind of sat there and said, well, are you going to take steroids? And he's like, No, I don't think so. He's like, well, just know that you're reading a book by someone who he took performance enhancing. So, you know, you almost like, you got to watch what you're really learning and how that person got to their goal. And then how you are trying to attain the same thing, but you're not going to be able to do that without steroids, you know? It was just a weirdly funny thing to think about. And I was just like, I'm like, dude, that guy just, he's definitely right. And
well, I don't know. I'll,
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll tell you how that's like evolved over the years with me. I see that a lot in like my professional career, right? Where, you know, I'm in the corporate culture and feedback is a very big thing in corporate America. Like, oh, you should be open to feedback. And I'm like, well, not really, because sometimes the feedback lacks context. It lacks perspective. So whenever someone gives me feedback or is offering feedback, the grain of salt is this contextual? And if it's not, I'm just going to disregard the shit, man, because it doesn't apply. Right. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, because you're applying principles, concepts, and ideas that have no bearing to your reality. And it's like that's a recipe for disaster. So
I think it's because we become starstruck a little bit on people and ideas and their ideas or their way of life. And then they think, oh, that's me. You know, I want to be that. And we can't be everyone, because there's so many influencers online now. It's almost hard to follow someone who you genuinely want to model, or maybe they've been through something similar than you. Like, that's more relatable. But when some people have so many different life paths and you're trying to like emulate that person, it's just harder, you know. In this day and age, people just get so confused with everybody, you know.
There's so much nuance, man. Like, you can't follow someone's map 100%. Like, and that's something that I'm clear about, even in the books that I've written and in my philosophy. It's like, there's no such thing as an absolute truth, right? And anyone who gives you an absolute truth is probably trying to sell you something. So beware. And I get some criticism because they're like, okay, well, isn't that statement itself an absolute truth? I'm like, well, no, because if you understood it, you would see the double entendre there. It's like, there's no such thing as an absolute truth, which means question everything, even the shit that I'm saying.
Right. It's funny. I think about the same term with never use absolute language. And it's like, well, that's a kind of a funny way of saying it. You just said never use absolute language, when never is an absolute word.
It's an absolute language. It's like, it's like a rap Lil Wayne thing. We will analyze the lyric and go, oh yeah, look at what he did there. But philosophy, you just want to criticize. It's like, man, it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that's cool though, that you kind of, there's so many ways to, that nuances, as you said, and methods of people doing certain things, and so many philosophers. I mean, I'm sure you got into like the Stoics as well, and kind of maybe got, you know, that down that rabbit hole. And, you know, it's just cool to live as a philosopher in that sense. Like, I think, when you think about stuff like that, how do you apply it to kind of your everyday life? You know, because they face challenges a lot, and they don't think about it. They don't think about it philosophically. They just think about it as, this is me, it's my victim. I, this is the circumstance, blaming. What is it about philosophy you think that just kind of makes you take things in life? And I'm not saying it's same smoother. Like, you can take same challenge and think it and somehow go through it smoother than the person who doesn't necessarily understand philosophy. That's my opinion about it. But what would you say?
Yeah. I think what philosophy does is it gives you the ability to figure out the best way to live, not the right way to live, but the best way for you to live given your own circumstances. And that's super powerful, because, you know, the philosophy, the first one I wrote was about perception, realizing how much of a bitch perception was. And when I made that statement or made that realization, it's because for me, I'd come to realize how powerful our lives, or how much perception played in creating our lives, right? Like, the frame you have ultimately determines the type of life you will live. And once I understood that, right, like, I would never have gotten to that point or that realization without philosophy, because philosophy helps you see things from multiple perspectives, you know, have different interpretations for one thing. And then you sort of kind of pick the one that, you know, fits with your morals, values, and ultimately helps you lead the best life possible. So I think for me, that's the framework for philosophy, and why I would encourage most people to dive into philosophy as a way to figure out what's the best path for me.
What do you think is, I mean, I know you said you started with Odyssey, but what would be a good book for someone to tune into that would be philosophical?
Man, I don't want to turn people off. There's tons. It depends on what type of philosophy you're looking for. Mm-hmm. I consume a lot of existential philosophy. So a lot of Soren Kierkegaard, a lot of Albert Camus, The Myth of Sisyphus. Just any Nietzsche is another good one. Those are great existential philosophers whose ideas influenced me a lot. So a lot of what I've created is heavily influenced specifically by Albert Camus. If you're looking on the more economic side, I really, really love Ayn Rand's ideas around objectivism. One of the books she wrote that really inspired me was The Virtue of Selfishness, especially in contrast to the culture I came from, which is very altruistic. You know, I came from Nigeria, which is a culture that is super dependent on God, but it's funny how superstitious the culture is in the same way. It's like how it's got this dependency on God, but yet this superstition also too that flows alongside it, and just the contradiction there just never really made sense to me, you know. So I think those are some of the philosophers that really have influenced me, and I mean there are more out there, but the ones that, you know, most directly have impacted my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when you talk about perception is a bitch, was that a book you wrote or a philosophy or an essay, or was that just something that you talked about at one point in time?
Yeah, so let me start from the end and work my way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
So where I ended up at was figuring out emotional intelligence, right? So when I look at the world today, it's pretty obvious that emotional intelligence is a skill set that's just lacking in the world. And when you look at some of the studies that have come out around social relationships, career success, mental health, the future belongs to the emotional intelligent. But there is no framework in current state that clearly outlines how to achieve emotional intelligence. There is nothing out there that says if you do these things, or, you know, if you understand these concepts, you are very much on your way to achieving emotional intelligence such that you can build stronger relationships, either romantically or platonically. You can have and enjoy career success, meaning you're eligible for promotions because you demonstrate a lot of those soft skills and you're just able to deal with a lot of the mental stress that comes with life. There is no framework that teaches people how to clearly achieve that. It's almost like the only time you find out someone is lacking emotional intelligence is when they do something that makes you recognize, holy shit, that guy doesn't have emotional intelligence, right? But it's like there's nothing to teach him before he got to that point, which I realize in hindsight, after looking through my journals over 20 years, that's what I had created. I wasn't trying to create it. It turned out that way. And for me, again, I'm not a medically trained psychiatrist or psychologist or anything like that. Mm-hmm. These are just the observations of a guy who made a deliberate attempt to record or journal his learnings over 20 years. And what I found is if you understand perception and empathy intimately well, as I've outlined in the books and in the TED Talks, you are very clearly going to achieve emotional intelligence, because people that I've seen who understand those concepts as well as I outline them in my writings do see the world from a completely different perspective. They're able to relate more with people. And we could probably get into more conversations, get more tactical about those terms, because the way I think about them is completely different from the way most people think about perception or empathy.
Hmm. Okay, and so then if we got into perception in particular, okay, what would you say is the significance? I mean, to me, I think your perception is just a recognizing that you have your own idea of what you think happened or mm-hmm. of what you believed. And I was just having somebody else on a podcast talk about how even memory is corrupted. There was a study done after 9/11, which was one of the most kind of more memorable times of like our modern history in America, at least. And people who were a witness to that in New York City were done. They did a study on them and they all recollected these events about 6 weeks afterward. And then they were told to retell that story, you know, another like 6 months and then another year and then 5 years and 10 years later, like they did this full study with it. And the story that they told was changing almost all the time. And so even people's own memory can be corrupted by just whatever. For some reason, they remember something as one thing, and then later on, they just remember it very differently. And so I don't know if it's about memory and other things, about perception in that sense, like, because people have to realize even your own perception is deceiving. And yeah, maybe those are my thoughts initially when I think about perception, going down a rabbit hole, but I would love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, so I think about it a little differently, right? And everything you said is generally what people think of when they think of perception. I think I'll give a framework here through an analogy or a story. So a while back, there were two young fish named John and Eli, right? Swimming in the ocean, going in one direction. Across from them on the opposite direction was an older fish just kind of swimming the other way. The older fish looks at the two young fish and goes, "Morning, boys. How's the water today?" The two young fish say nothing back and they just keep going. But a few, you know, swimming up the stream a few meters up the road in the water, one of the fish, John, could no longer bite his tongue. So confused, he looks to his buddy Eli and he goes, "What the fuck is water?" and Eli looks and John says, "Man, I have no idea what the fuck that old fish was talking about." That's hilarious. That story is funny, but it bears a resemblance to how we human beings understand or think about perception. Just as the two young fish do not recognize or are oblivious to the fact that water is the essence that actually creates and gives them life, we too as human beings do not understand that perception is the essence that actually creates our lived reality and what we call life lived. So when you're 90 years old, looking back on your life, everything in those years happened. The existential point is that everything you experienced, the life you lived, the relationships, the friendships, the hurt, the pain, the heartache, all that, the opportunities you had for success, the failures, all that was determined by your perspective. Your outlook on the world essentially created the reality you lived. And once you understand that, there's an existential depression that overwhelms you and makes you want to go suicidal coffee. Should I kill myself or go grab coffee? Because if I had a different perspective than I had today, I would have lived a completely different life, but I cannot turn back the hands of time. So it's all fucked. If you think about, you know, trying to advance in the corporate world, whether you get the promotion or not get the promotion determines largely not by how hard you work, but how your superior officer perceives you. You know, a lot of when you deep dive a lot of relationships that fail, a lot of it comes down to perception. They had two different perspectives on how to raise kids, how to spend, save money, like these things these concepts in and of themselves don't end those relationships or create a lot of the heartache and pain that you go through. It's the perceptions you have of these things, right? Like I hear stories of a father who was gone a lot and, you know, he was gone a lot to provide for his kids. He wasn't there because dad had to be gone. But the kids interpret his absence as a lack of love. My dad doesn't give a fuck about me. Now, they're all grown up and they want no relationship with their father. It's like, fuck that dude. He wasn't there for us. Now, you realize that the world in which this father lives, which he doesn't have a relationship with his kids, was not created by truth or reality. That was created by their perception or their perspective of his behavior and how they perceive that. So the fracture or the friction to their relationship or their lack of a relationship was caused by perception. You know, so and there are many more examples, you know, greater than even the ones that I've shared. But I think perception is the typical blind spot, right? It's the way we talk about the devil, and the greatest trick he pulled on people was convincing the world he didn't exist. Mm-hmm. I think from a perspective, using the word perception here, it's like some of the biggest mental blind spots we have is not understanding how the frames we use or our outlooks and the things that are in the way things are being interpreted about you essentially determines your emotions, the way people treat you, your life outcomes. I mean, whether you get the job or not depends on how somebody perceives what you're wearing. Now, the reality in which you don't get the job and you've got to like be homeless and shit, like that happened. But guess what caused it? Someone's perception of you is why you are homeless right now, because if somebody else had perceived you completely differently, you'd probably be in a job.
That's right. Okay, so that's, well, dang, I just thought of one other thing, which is, okay, so if somebody has a perception of, let's say, some past thing, you know, you see a lot of people trying to like move past something, get over it, you know.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, it's their perspective, whether it's their daddy wasn't there, all the things. I feel like, what do you think are some effective methodologies for people to be like, dude, this is just how I'm perceiving it. Does it make it real? Does it make it true? Like you said, there's no absolute truth. Like that yep. doesn't, you know, when they reflect on their perception of what the truth was, well, dad walked out, you know, or I'm homeless because this person, you know, whatever. What do you think are some good ideas to consider when people are dealing with some kind of challenge and they're stuck in it? Like they're literally trapped in the perception, thinking this is, you know, something's wrong. I need to address it, right? It's kind of like the Matrix in a more yeah. personal note, because it's the matrix of your own understanding. It's yeah. your perspective. So yeah, I mean, how would you say someone can get past something or like, fuck, dude, eliminate a perspective that doesn't serve them anymore?
First of all, the awareness is the victory over it. The moment you become aware to perception's ability to create a lived experience or a lived reality, that's the victory. You've already won. So that's like 99% mm-hmm. of it. Mm. The other 1% is now being able to recognize those moments where a perspective or a misperception or a misinterpretation is about to cause an experience for you that is not going to be favorable. So in those moments, call the shit out. So I'll give you an example. You know, this was years ago. And, you know, when I give my examples here, I'm not saying this is the only way this plays out. Like there, you have to find how this applies in your life or is applied in your life and you missed it. So I walk into Walmart and there are these Salvation Army people who are, you know, out there kind of asking for money. Mm-hmm. And I was in a rush because like typically I give, right? Like I enjoy giving. So typically I'd give, but this one particular day I was just too much in a hurry and I just blew past the lady and I was like, no, not today. I'm kind of in a rush. Now, the awareness to perception and how it creates a lived reality, it's like, okay, cool. I know how perception can be a bitch. So on my way out, I made it a point, which most people would not have done this, but I made it a point to go up to the lady and say, hey, when I came in, I noticed that the way I responded to you was a bit short and abrupt. I want to call that out, apologize, and let you know that was not my intent. And she was like, oh, I appreciate you saying that. And she left. And I left. Mm-hmm. Here's why I did that. On the off chance that I get in a wreck on my way home and I'm laying in the ditch dying and she's the one who pulls over, if her memory of me or perspective of me is, oh, that's the motherfucker who wouldn't give me money earlier today and blew me off, I die. You realize that, right? The reality in which I am dead was caused by her perspective of me. Now, but because her perspective, I'm hoping in this case, is more favorable because I actually came and apologized and called it out, then I live. And there are moments like that with greater consequences to your life where a perspective is going to determine the outcome of your life. That is the essence of the first half of emotional intelligence, which is just understanding how influential perception is in creating lived reality. So I landed at the equation: what you perceive plus what other people plus how other people perceive you equals your life, your lived reality.
I'm thinking of something where, you know, you're essentially, so a lot of people are saying you shouldn't care what people think, right? Oh, just yeah. do you, man. Be your best self, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Be and your idea, self. Yeah, yeah. And I think your concept here is actually be tactical about how you are perceived.
Yeah.
And that will get you ahead in life.
Yeah, oh, politicians, yeah. Actors, any successful person in the world understands what I'm saying. This is not new knowledge. It's just the middle class
and
the
PR. It's PR studying. Like that's what you do, right? Your public relationship, your relationship with the public. That's why you got entire firms, you know, established doing exactly that, right? Of course, John yeah. D. Rockefeller would leave his office in Manhattan and he would, you know, take a penny and give it to the homeless and he'd have a journalist specifically take a photo of it just so that he could create this PR that he was a giving person.
Yeah, how do you think billionaires like Warren Buffett are able to walk around without needing bodyguards? You do that because you've created this perception of you as a, you know, man of the people, right? So they won't fuck with you.
Yeah. So
you know, they don't come with crazy to think.
That's right. That's right.
The reality in which a billionaire can walk around and not be killed is because he's done a very good job at convincing you that he's on your side.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny, man. I think of like, of course, like Elon Musk, right? He buys Twitter. And it's not about like, oh, I'm saving free speech. That's kind of his thing. No, he just bought the largest megaphone inside of your brand, which kind of goes into more of a business concept. But it's just like your brand is, I'm thinking about this all the time, by the way, in terms of, okay, I show up to this thing. One of my lessons in life about perspective, now that I think about it, is talking less and not being the person who's talking the most, right? In some room full of people. Be that person that sits there and asks more questions and listens.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I've found that by doing this and then giving an opportunity to speak, hey, Dylan, I want you to introduce yourself to the group. We're doing blah, blah, blah. I speak so eloquently and effectively that they're surprised to think, okay, this guy's really well spoken, but he shut the fuck up the whole time he was here. I didn't even know he could speak this way, you know? Yeah. And I've learned that that's a perspective. I want people to see me as a listener more than somebody who's talking.
A quote is, it's best to be quiet and thought to be a fool than to speak and remove all doubt, you know? So,
yeah, that's right. That's a good, great quote. Cause I think that's something and it's like, it's not about, you know, it's tactical in a sense that I want people to perceive me as a good listener or someone who's empathetic, you know, someone who's understanding, when that really isn't me 100%. You know, I'm the interrupter, you know, I'm like, no, I need to interrupt because like, and I don't say this consciously, but it's subconscious. What I have to say is way more important than what the fuck y'all are talking about. Like, I'm here to tell y'all some shit that's more important. That's the subconscious thing inside of me, the programming of like, y'all are just talking about whatever. I'm gonna come here and tell y'all this, the thing, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Let me set this straight.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like,
look, I 100% agree. Like, typically, the person telling you not to give a fuck what people think about you is somebody who is massively rich and the laws of reality don't really apply to. And even that's a relative thing to say because, like, Elon, for example, is still beholden to shareholders. Like, to some degree, you still have to care what people think about you. But for the average person like us, that is a very false premise. And it's so false because to say when people say that, here's what they mean. Don't have your value and how you think of yourself be tied to other people's opinions of you. That is a completely different statement than don't give a fuck how people perceive you or what they think about you. Because no, everything, like, life does not exist in a vacuum, right? And everything you will achieve in this life will come off the backs of other people. So if you're going to influence other people, and influence is the name of leadership, then you kind of have to care how they think about you, how they perceive you, and play an active role in determining what that is.
I couldn't agree more. This is a really good conversation already for people to hear because I mean, there's so much going on. As like you said, it's like to not care about how people perceive you. I get it. It's not going to make you very successful because a part of success, I think, is to be perceived in a positive light. I do think there's a ratio. I think that you should have like 20% or more, a little bit more hating on you because, I mean, that's how the world is, bro. Like, if you don't have enough haters, I get that kind of concept. You know, that kind of concept. Like, you need more haters. That's what Cat Williams was saying this shit on a comedy special. It's funny.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
Yeah, like a percentage of people that are going to dislike you based on what you're saying. I don't know. It's hard to navigate when you're outspoken. If you're outspoken about something, or you're opinionated, or you state a fact about something, you know, some people hate on it. Be like, damn. I didn't know this would be this much hate. And bro, the perception of others now, or in, let's say in that area, is like, oh, this guy is whatever, you know, they have their own ideas of me. So there's some persistence that I'm like, Oh man, I can't be worried about what other people think. I don't think there's analysis and paralysis in that sense. But it's crazy. But I know that's the internet, by the way. I want to say the internet is almost different. Because in person, I'm a very likable, one of the most likable people. And I actually strive to be that way. I'm not an asshole, I'm not a dick. You know what I
That's
mean?
your
So
perspective, by the way,
yeah,
right?
that's also my perspective. And so I just feel that, overall in person, I probably have a good relationship with the public. But dude, on the internet, fuck, dude, TikTok is, I'm just ridic people are ridiculous, they'll have something to say about everything.
Even social media, I see differently. When I gave that first TED talk or the second one, Perception is the Root of All Evil, I made a statement in that talk and I said, the fact that there's 8 billion people in the world and we can have different interpretations to one thing is in my mind, in my opinion, a defect in the human design, right? Like if there is a God, there is definitely a flaw in the design because he allowed us to have multiple perspectives. Now, again, there's no such thing as an absolute truth. So that defect plays out in positive ways, right? Like we have innovative ideas. We all don't think the same. We all see things from different perspectives. And there's beauty in the difference in opinions. But make no mistake about it, that a lot of what's fucked up about the world, conflict, and how we can't get on the same page from an empathy perspective and seeing other people's points of views is largely driven by the fact that we have different interpretations to shit, right? Like 100 people could read the Bible and they all walk away with 100 different interpretations. But like, that's concerning because if you think about God as an absolute being, I would imagine that his words were meant to be absolute. And yet we have 100 different interpretation of words from God that should be absolute. They're words from God. There should be no other interpretation outside of what the intent is, but we can't fucking align on what that is. That to me is a defect in the design, that even things that should be absolute aren't.
That's so funny. Great point about, the Bible and various religious texts. Like, there are so many ideas in there that want to be absolute, but people have so many different perspectives. Obviously, look at the Christianity in particular has so many denominations. So many denominations, which essentially means a different perspective of the Bible, the same shit, the same shit.
It's like if there are, to me, right? And again, I have to preface with this is just my perspective and it's not absolute truth. I am constantly evolving and questioning even my own shit. But to me, if there are multiple perspectives on a thing, then that lets me know that thing is not absolute, which means it's open to question. I think the problem where most people have blind spots in their lives is that there are parts of their lives where they refuse to question because they see them as absolute truth. So the person who's being fucked up by their own religion will never see it because, or their non-religion will never see it because from their perspective, that is absolute truth. There's no need to question it. So they keep believing the same thing because it's tied to salvation or whatever the case might be. But for me, a lot of the pain point of perception that I see in people's lives is people who, it's like, man, if you just believe something different, your life would be completely different. If you change the frame, you would live a completely different life. But they can't because they believe what they believe absolutely.
That's when you think about people who, so I think we're psychologically made up somehow to deify people or just be influenced so easily. I don't know if it's IQ or EQ, probably emotional intelligence, but it's got to be something about people where it's certain people do not question stuff. And this is the version of that I would understand as the Matrix. It's this system of control, it's the perception of control that, people just believe and they adopt and they take as their own. And if you don't question anything and you don't have an inquisitive mind, you're going to get trapped. And not just the beliefs about your own past and your own bullshit, but also the beliefs that society want to implement onto you that you're just going to be like, all right, this is it, if you ever question stuff, especially back in times where we had no, America wasn't a part and it was, historically speaking, not freedom of speech, you would be called a heretic. Someone who's like way off, you can't question authority. And it's this de actually it's the desperation of authoritarians to control information and to limit questioning because if you limit the amount of questioning and the amount of open perspectives, you essentially can rule for thousands of years. I mean, that's kind of the thing, you know?
I think to answer your question, it's not IQ. It is for sure EQ. Because the more, so think about the equation, right? Perception plus empathy equals emotional intelligence. So we're in the perception bucket right now. Mm-hmm. The more absolute truths a man has or woman, the less likely they are to have emotional intelligence, because you're less likely to be rational, right? Like, to be rational is to be able to accept other people's points of views that contradict your own. And you cannot be rational if you just see the world through an absolute lens, because again, like we just talked about, 8 billion people in the world, all of who don't share the same insights or have the same beliefs or have the same perspectives, but yet we all walk around believing that the shit we believe is just absolute truth. That is the very definition of a narcissist, right? That
I was just gonna say insanity too. Yeah, it's just like,
you cannot in good faith look at yourself and call yourself a rational person. So for me, one of the steps to achieving EQ is being able to, not saying you have to tell yourself that you are wrong, but just open your mind to the idea that, look, there are things in this world that at some point were thought to be true and now are no longer true. And there are things I believe now that in 5 years, I'll probably not going to be true. And I don't know what those are. So to that degree, I would just approach everything in my life from a perspective of like doubt and say, this is what I think at this moment. I wouldn't take it as absolute truth because, you know, it may not ever be true. And when you approach life from there, you develop a just natural sense of stoicism that ultimately leads you to EQ.
That was the most powerful thing said, like just perfect. Just to transition a little bit on the empathy concept, like how would you define empathy? And so you're saying perception and empathy, is emotional intelligence. So what is empathy to you?
Yeah. So I think preface this in the medical or psychological literature, perception and empathy are seen as just concepts within the general EQ field. From my experience over the last 20 years, I think understanding those two concepts actually make up EQ, you know? So I don't have data to back that up outside of my own experience. When I think of empathy, I think the way we think about empathy today is flawed. We think about empathy as something you give other people, right? Like, be more empathetic, see things from other people's perspectives, put yourself in other people's shoes. I think that's the flawed perspective, or that frame is what causes the breakdown in empathy, because it conditions us to think that empathy is this one-way thing, this monologue that you give. But essentially, the way I see it is empathy is a dialogue. And the tenet here is you should not expect me to see your perspective if you're not going to see mine. And you should not expect me to give you empathy if you're not going to give it back. So I see empathy as this live transaction where two people are given and receiving simultaneously. And until the equation is complete, empathy has not happened. So the way this looks from a practical perspective is, you know, there have been times in my life where my wife and I have had fights. And, you know, it's like, who gives who empathy now? Right? Like, do I give the empathy and see it from her perspective? Well, I don't feel heard because I have a perspective too. You know, does she give it to me? But she doesn't feel heard because she's got a perspective too. Mm-hmm. And I told this story at the TED Talk, which is, you know, where we pull up to this taco stand and there's a line for tacos, right? So I immediately go like, fuck no, I'm not getting in line for tacos. Sarah's like, yeah, we're going to go get in that line for fucking tacos. Now, here's the problem. I'm from Africa. Right? Nigeria. From my perspective, a line for food means poverty. It reminds me of a time when I stood in line with my mom and brother begging for food. So I'm like, babe, I will fly you to fucking Paris before I stand in line for tacos. Like, I would take you to Paris to get these fucking tacos.
Yeah.
She's a white girl from the South. You've met Sarah. So from her perspective, she's like, a line for food means the food is going to be good. So She's like, we're going to go stand in that fucking line. Empathy would be one of us giving up and saying, sure, let's go. That's not empathy. That's the monologue. And that's the disconnect, because one person walks away feeling fucked, right? They walk away feeling cheated. The person whose perspective didn't see, who wasn't seen or conceded, is the one who got fucked. And that's the empathy equation, which is, babe, you can't expect me to see your perspective if you're not going to see mine, because I'm a rational human being coming from a place of truth, a lot like you are also a rational human being coming from a place of truth. So we are not crazy. We've got some lived experience that's causing us to react this way. We've got some perspective, some perception, some interpretation of a line for food that's causing, because me not wanting to stand in line is as rational an idea to me as you wanting to stand in line. So obviously, both perspectives are simultaneously true. And empathy says, you shouldn't expect me to see your perspective if you're not going to see mine. You shouldn't expect me to give you empathy if you're not going to give it back to me. Once we align on that as the empathy equation, empathy has actually happened. And now we can craft a pathway forward.
It sounds like compromise too, right? There's some level of understanding and compromise.
No, it's not compromise, but it's because compromise implies someone still gets fucked. That's the essence of compromise. Compromise, someone walks away getting fucked, right? With the empathy equation, both people walk away feeling heard. Both people walk away feeling seen, because there is a genuine desire to understand. Like, I love my wife, right? So when she's like, we're getting in line for food, I'm like, I'm the leader in this relationship. We're not doing this. All the rational parts of me is like articulating why we should just go somewhere where it's faster to get food. Mm-hmm. That's not the right approach. Or saying, okay, let's just compromise and go get burgers. We both get fucked. But to say, babe, I married you and I know you're a rational person. If I thought you were irrational, I wouldn't have married you. Fair? Cool. So when I see you having this reaction to like really wanting to get in line for time, I want to understand what experience you've had in your life that makes a line for food something you want to go be a part of. Mm-hmm. And she needs to do the same for me, which is, babe, Deji, you're a rational guy. Most people would agree that you're rational, but you've got this reaction to a line for food. What lived experience have you had that makes you look at the line for food and go, fuck this, I feel all kinds of weird, this bugs me out, I don't want to do this? And then I get to articulate that.
It's an opportunity for more understanding between people.
100%.
Yeah.
And once you approach empathy from that perspective, plus the new insights we have to perception, you are closer to achieving emotional intelligence. Now you see the blueprint for perception plus empathy equals emotional intelligence, because now you are much more equipped to deal with conflict in your relationships, right? So you have better relationships because you're always seeking to understand. It's just your natural state now. You are better equipped to showcase the soft skills you need to move up at work, because look, everyone can do the hard skills, but what gets people promoted and moving up in corporations these days is their soft skills. I mean, you start searching through LinkedIn, the data supports it. Most companies from a leadership perspective aren't looking for people who can do the technical job. No one cares. They're a dime a dozen. We can teach monkeys to do this shit. Mm-hmm. We're looking for people who understand conflict resolution, who can make people feel seen, who can build great cultures and cultivate buy-in within those cultures, who can connect with people on a fundamental level. These are all the high-value six-figure skill sets that almost no one has. But there's no current format to teach people how to achieve these things. And that's where we come in. Perception plus empathy equals emotional intelligence.
Wow. Just taking that concept alone and just some of those soft skills that you just mentioned, if people were to harness like YouTube, whatever you got to do, each one of those things, I completely agree. There are so many things that just are, whenever you think of people coming together or making some kind of business work or whatever, it's really soft skills, you know? I don't know why one of those is integrity for me. I just fuck with it. Like, please just have integrity. Like when you think you know the right thing to do, like just do it and it comes easier to you, as somebody who has integrity, I don't know, that's a soft skill, like for me.
Yeah. No, I love that. It's do what you say you're going to do.
Following through.
Yeah, just follow through.
Those are just, I'm just thinking of one soft skill, but that what you just said is golden packaged, like, yes. The emotional intelligence is very significant, and you're absolutely right about LinkedIn and all these Indeed.com, whatever places you're looking to get hired at. That's why I tell a lot of people, if you're looking for a job, I haven't personally had a job in 10 years. Actually, 24 Hour Fitness was my last W-2, dude. I'm not kidding. Nice. I've literally had so many other things I've done. But I think that, you know, but even going back to that job in particular, yeah, sure, I was looking online to like get a job, right? And I just feel that, yeah, sure, there's some jobs that are kind of out of your state, right? Or a city away, right? Getting in person might be a little difficult. But ultimately, man, getting in person or just trying to get an interview, like that should be your first goal. Because everyone looks at you as just a piece of paper or a document or whatever. And they're just like, seems like a good guy, whatever. But physically showing up, shaking someone's hand and be like, hey, I already sent in an application to your hiring manager, or maybe you're meeting the hiring manager for whatever reason.
That's perception.
Not saying to go stalk them, you know, or something, but go in. Actually connect with them. Enhancing the perception, right? Of you were once
that's the
a
first
database.
Half of the equation. Yep.
Yep. And it's like now you're enhancing the perception of who you are by showing up and shaking a hand. Hey, I would love to learn about what you guys are doing there. And fucking people are working in corporate offices, man. They got plenty of time on their hands. They're just dicking around a lot of the time. Somebody's gonna show you around, you know, and you can almost have this idea like, oh, I'm probably gonna work here soon, so I'd love to learn a little more about it. And so many cases, I'm actually interviewing the manager to be like, is this a great environment to work for? I'm not talking about a fucking labor union, but more of just like you're interviewing the company in a way. You're like, it's my energy we're talking about here too. And do I want to invest in this company just like as much as you would want to invest in me? Those are the types of conversations I would have about hiring. But just that also goes for business partnerships and things like that. Like, you know, not asking what this company is going to do for you, but asking what you can do for your company, that kind of concept.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 100%, the person who demonstrates better EQ is going to get the job, even if their hard skills or their ability to do the job is somewhat subpar, because you can teach that. But you can't teach good conflict resolution skills. You can't teach somebody to have difficult conversations. You can't teach somebody how to like be a good human being. And ultimately, that's what I'm looking to solve for with this idea.
Yeah. So kind of going into that then, what are you working on now with this concept? Like, are you looking to go and speak on this concept? Because this is powerful. I mean, powerful. Yeah. I was going through some of your stuff and I'm like, I already know he had this be the verb, not the noun concept 10 years ago. He was already philosophizing. I don't know if that's a word, but I just knew that you were a philosopher and had those very awesome, you know, just ways of speaking into ideas and bringing ideas to life that I'm thinking, man, so what are you working on now? Like, are you packaging this into like, are you trying to have more talks? You can host a seminar or write another book, or like, what's going on for you now?
So the end goal is to create, so I founded this company called the PE Group, and the end goal is to essentially make emotional intelligence accessible to everyone. I want to achieve widespread adoption of EQ across all ages and demographics. And we're going to do that by utilizing a couple platforms. So I've written the book Perception, which is book one. Book two should publish pretty soon, which is The Empathy Equation. The TED Talk is out for that. And then the cumulative effect of both books, book one and two, is really mapping out how to achieve emotional intelligence. So that's one pathway to get it out there. The second is where I'm actually about to get my team together to start shooting content for YouTube. So long form content where we deep dive a lot of these philosophical ideas in ways that people can actually implement from a practical perspective. So if you think, you know, like I don't want to give any names, but similar long form content that seems to be very useful to people is what we're trying to create, but in this niche kind of emotional intelligence space, because when you start looking at content specifically to help you grow in that area, almost nothing exists, you know? So, and the ones that do exist are very general in the sense that they don't give you a systemized framework for how to go do the thing. How do I become a better husband or better human being, not just for myself, but also for the people that I'm, that I have relationships with personally, or, you know, at work, at home, or whatever the case might be.
I thought I thought of Start With Why by Simon Sinek. He's kind of a philosophy for companies, and he does these little talks everywhere.
But this is more philosophy for humans, right? Like he's got that niche, the market, the ideas are practical to businesses and how they, you know, identify the mission and the vision for the organization and get people to buy in. Mine is more, how do I help people actually thrive within these relationship structures, whether it's at home or at work? Because I tell you this, most of us, if not everyone, has a fractured relationship in their life, some relationship that's been damaged by perception or just a general lack of empathy, right? You think about marriages, you know, kids with their parents. A lot of these relationships go south very quickly. And when you root cause why they go south or why they went south, I promise you, you see perception and empathy right there as a root cause. And I figured if we can solve for those two concepts, not only do we achieve EQ, but we actually help people have more meaningful relationships.
Well, you're definitely not in a shortage of problems to solve in that area, because
divorce
rates are high. I mean, so many problems
loneliness
between relationships.
You know?
Yeah. That is so true, dude. And I do agree with you. And I'm someone who dives deep in the YouTube podcasting world, and there really isn't just a straightforward conversation about these two concepts put together the way that you're doing it. It's powerful. Honestly, I'm a huge fan. Huge fan of that.
Yeah. Well, now I just have to go execute the plan and the vision. So that's, we'll see. And I hope the market responds well to it too.
Yeah. Have you ever thought of doing, Kajabi. Some kind of course masterclass kind of thing. Really kind of nice. I mean, you know, that's usually for profit, but some Kajabi courses are made for free, or you have a free course and then you give that away, and then, you know, whatever, that turns into like maybe more book sales. But whenever you come and you launch your second book, I'm going to have you back on. And we'll probably hopefully deep dive into that book. We'll sell it for you. Please. Yeah, that would be great.
Because awesome. I love
definitely coming to the end of the time here. But man, I really appreciate you being on here, bro. You want to leave anything with anybody else? Any ideas or maybe concepts that you're passionate about?
Right now in my life, I mean, the only concepts I've been passionate about for the last, call it, two decades have been perception and empathy, because I recognize now in hindsight that I could have avoided a lot of pain. I could have saved, I could have had more meaningful relationships in my life. I'm glad my wife and I are still together, but believe me, there are battle scars in there from just not understanding these two concepts well. I think even professionally, I could have gone further if I understood perception and how to create frames and work through frames. You know, so as I create this system, this idea, this ideology, again, it's me coming from a place of, here's how I fucked up. I don't want you to go through the same pain. So maybe we help you. Maybe I give you a different perspective that serves you. And that's essentially it. So the empathy equation, perception, E plus P equals EQ.
I want to also, by the way, mention this. It's so important. People can't see it because you're wearing a nice, you know, shirt. But I mean, Deji is, and people who are listening probably have no clue what you look like. very extremely fit. One of the most like strong, very fit guys. So it helps, by the way, perception. When you perceive someone as like, dude, this guy's fucking ripped. Like, you are ripped, bro.
Yeah, they listen more, right?
They do listen more. It's crazy. But I do want to kind of mention that for people maybe listening or just, I mean, bro, your fitness philosophy and whatever you've been doing for God knows how long, you look like you're 22, bro.
Thanks, man.
And yeah, so there's that. And very importantly, you're still with Sarah, which is impressive. Yep. You know, you're with the same person. You're married. You're happy. You're in love. I mean, that is, again, a testament to who you are as a person. Like, what the you're saying is working. It works for you.
You're fit.
You're healthy. Got a great relationship. I just think edification-wise, I mean, you wouldn't sit there and say that about yourself maybe, but like, I've got to just say that right now.
I appreciate
so people
that.
Can kind of see that.
The scars are there, right? the battle scars are there. Yeah. I hope for the next person, you will still have those scars. I want to make sure it's not as much as the ones we have. So,
yeah, awesome, Deji. Well, thanks for joining, bro, and we'll have you back on again. Okay.
Cool. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
All righty. Peace, brother.
All right. Bye.